agencies can become terrible to run when you're saying yes to everything. That's one of both the blessings and curses of running a productized agency, is keeping it focused.
Hey, podcast listener, even if you are alone in your entrepreneurial journey, know that today, right now in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of entrepreneurs from all around the globe seeking to grow better, more profitable, location-independent businesses. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and download our entire back catalog, check out tropicalmba.com.
Happy Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. And shout out to our editor and producer, who will faithfully cut off the first 15 minutes of this conversation, which is mainly focused around what type of whiteboard to buy for your home office. I think we're going to have to retool that one a little bit, Ian. We're going to have to work on that
one. We'll come with the heat and maybe we'll present it here soon. But I do think that this is a very important topic.
It's a very
to discuss.
Topic.
I mean,
it's critical.
The idea of a whiteboard is...
We're trying it again. We're going at it again. Here we go.
All right, I'm done. Save it.
You put up the white flag. All right. We have a special guest, John Daugherty. He is the founder of Editor Ninja, which is an incredible productized service. We're going to talk about that, as well as some of his best business ideas. We are going to kick around some business ideas, perhaps. It'll help you inspire some of your own. Ian, so many of us have a service component or could add one to improve cash flow. So maybe, yeah, we shake it up a little bit with John. I've always admired him as someone with really interesting takes on business. You're going to hear him here today. We've asked him about some of the key trends he's seen in the service space, including fractionalized everything and how we might implement that, either on the buy side or the sell side, so to speak. And we're going to talk about some of the most important factors in growing a productized service in 2024. First, some news. I just want to give a shout out to John, who will be speaking at DC MEX, May 6th to the 8th in Playa del Carmen. I'm already packing my bags, buddy.
Bro,
getting excited.
I got my swim shorts on now. That's the thing. I just wear them every day. And I'm ready to just slide right into the pool.
Thanks to all of you who applied for a scholarship ticket to this event. It was really cool to see the applications through. Many of you are looking for a kick in the butt, some inspo, some lift. A couple hundred other founders. Looking forward to inviting one of you. We'll announce the lucky winner in our newsletter. One other thing, I was taking a look at Q1 numbers. We're seeing an incredibly strong year thus far at our recruiting company, Remote First Recruiting. I'm not quite sure what that is. I think it's a mix, Ian, of market demand, but also basically lengthening our sales cycle is a way to put it. Like having conversations that are well before our clients are hiring. And that's always been a little bit of a challenge for us. Those of you that listen to the pod regularly know we've been talking about like SDRs and CSRs on the pod. But the team's doing that through their newsletters, through the website, through the Slack channel, talking with their clients. And we're talking more about things like budgeting, like how do I decide when to hire? What does my LTV need to be in order to justify a hire? How should I frame up this role and think about hiring in the next few months? Those sorts of conversations, I think we kind of shied away from them in the past few years because like, how do you build content around that? Mm-hmm. And this year, we just sort of like jumped in feet first and said, we don't care whether it's marketing, sales or not. We just want to talk with our clients. So what are they talking about? And if what they're talking about is like LTV to like cost ratio for this new hire, we'll just get on the phone with them and talk about it. No questions asked. Let's just workshop. And that is growing the amount of leads that we have. So just something out there. I guess the concept for the audience is for a service business with a high LTV, like we have at our recruiting company, we're just optimizing for conversations, any conversations. And so if our recruiting team has like super rigor about the types of conversations they have, like I only want to talk to you if you want to buy something, we just have less of them. And if we have less conversations, we have less sales. And so that's been a good strategy for us so far in Q1. It's paying off.
This is not so dissimilar to like what people used to do, which is play golf with prospective clients and existing clients. Sort of point that
that's
out.
That's right. That's right. Just distinct like, dinner strategy. Yeah.
It's just shoot the shit, man, and like figure out what their problems are and see if you can solve them.
Yeah. I mean, we're a small boutique recruiting company. And it's like, hey, if a client wants to talk to us about this or that or want to go golfing, let's do it. That sounds fun. All right. Ian, we got a great guest today. John Daugherty, the founder of Editor Ninja, has joined us for a business brainstorming session. Stick around for that. Let's roll the conversation.
My name is John Daugherty. I am the founder of a productized agency called Editor Ninja. We edit all the content that people are putting out on their website, sales pages, marketing content, AI content, that sort of stuff. But I'm a long time digital marketer. SEO, content marketing is my background. And then been building my own agencies throughout the last 8.5 years. And I've been listening to the pod actually since about 2016, 2017. I was thinking back the other day. I was like, I remember walking through the grocery store in the mountains. I live in Colorado. And listening to this podcast in probably 2017. And so it's a kind of a full circle moment. So I'm super stoked to be here.
Long time, first time. I love it. And you're coming to DC, Mexico to share your story from our stage.
Yeah, I'm stoked. Thank you for having me. I'm nervous as hell, but it's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. We're going to have a blast.
Yeah.
Let's jump into it. I want to talk about how I came across you, John. When we started Dynamite Jobs, it's a story we talked about on the show. The problem that I actually wanted to solve at the beginning was this concept of connecting service providers with founders.
Interesting.
And so it was a little bit off from a job board. I was like, I hate job boards. And the reason is I got to describe my problem, figure out like what I need. What I want to do is go shopping for a solution. And I thought, wow, in the DC, there's all these solutions. There's people with agencies that do this and people that coach you on this. And I thought, what if there was an intelligent way, sort of like a high-end Fiverr, where you could go in and say, man, I need someone to come in and help me improve my podcast downloads this month. Who does that? And I came across you. Mm. You did that to a degree. And I want to get the sense for where Get Credo came about and how that idea popped up and where the business is today.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually interesting you say that, because when I was running Credo, I actually talked about grass is greener. I was like, we should launch a job board. Because we got people asking us, they're like, well, can you help me hire someone full time? I'm like, no, we help you connect with agencies, right? And so I was like, we should start a job board. So we actually did put one up, and it got zero traction after about 6 months and $10,000 of like people time wasted trying to get a traction. I shut it down. So Credo basically is a service for companies to find the right marketing, design or development agency to work with. So it started off as a side project for me a little over 10 years ago. 2013, where I was working for an agency in New York City. I was consulting on the side, got a couple raises and didn't need the money anymore, and realized I was spending 2 weekends a month in my apartment in Brooklyn by myself doing work for clients that I liked, but I didn't need their money anymore. So I stopped. I basically told them I'm stopping consulting, and they're like, well, who should we work with? And I was like, I can refer you to some people. And then I realized lead generation is a big business. So I got in a lead in Provo, Utah, and pinged my buddy Brandon at Wallaroo Media and was like, hey, Brandon, I have this lead. Would you be interested in paying $50 for it? And he's like, yeah, what's your PayPal? So 3 minutes later, I had $50 in my PayPal account. I sent him the lead. He went on to make thousands of dollars from it. And I bought a domain name and put it up on some shared hosting and launched it as a side project. So it was a side project for a couple of years. And then I got laid off from my job within Zillow Group. I was running marketing on Trulia Rentals. And I got laid off and was basically like, I don't want to work for somebody else. So I started doing a lot of SEO consulting and started building. It was called HireGun at the time, HireGun.co. Went through the entrepreneurial travails of a cease and desist because I was infringing on someone else's trademark unknowingly, and rebranded it about 4 or 5 months later and continued to grow it. So I grew that business for about 7 years, grew it to about $500,000 in revenue, generated over 250 million in leads for digital agencies. And then ultimately I exited it about 18 months ago and sold it to a strategic buyer. And that's a large part of the story, but Editor Ninja, of course, was part of that as well, because I had that going and wanted to move on to this business full time. So yeah. I always saw the need that you saw of like connecting people. Hey, I want to grow my podcast downloads. I want to improve my SEO. I want to write content. Unfortunately, Marketer Hire came onto the scene focused on those senior strategic people. So I met Chris over there and I'm like, y'all take that part of the market. I'll take the agency side of the market. And everybody was happy.
There was another company like Marketer Hire out there. What's the company that does the high-end freelancers? They're a huge company now.
You're talking about TopTal?
TopTal.
TopTal. Yep.
They had a model similar to what Marketer Hire, because when we started Dynamite Jobs, Marketer Hire was everywhere. Yeah. Like I typed in that once And their paid people are geniuses. I mean, I just couldn't get away from MarketerHire.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They took a bunch of funding and so were able to like spend a lot to kind of find that traction. But yeah, they grew super fast. TopTal was a very similar model. Yeah, I think they were just focused on developers and I think they went to designers and some business people, but they never cracked the marketing nut. So there was kind of a space there for MarketerHire. I looked at doing that with Credo and we basically became a lead generation agency for marketing agencies, as meta as that is. And it worked out pretty well.
Credo had the same problem, I'm sure, that Dynamite Jobs has, which is two-sided marketplace. Which side did you start with and which side were you always fighting with? Or was it just kind of this one grows, that one grows?
I initially seeded the supply side of the market. When you're kickstarting a two-sided marketplace like that, you have to have the ability to deliver or the ability to recruit the people to deliver. So I basically seeded the initial network with like 20 or 30 really of my friends that were like senior providers, Facebook ad specialists, SEO specialists, and then also agencies. And so it kind of went from there. I was like, all right, I feel comfortable that if we get in content marketing leads, we have at least three providers that we can connect them with. So I did that. And with that business and really with most like two-sided businesses and also even agencies, even businesses like Editor Ninja, where we have 14 editors, the challenge is almost always the demand side, generating enough demand because there are always more people wanting work. It's a lot harder to find the people who actually want to get the work done.
How did you solve that for Credo and how has that general demand strategy evolved through the genesis story of Editor Ninja?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an SEO and content guy. So set out creating a lot of content, ranking in Google for various terms with Credo because it was more of a marketplace. And we had a lot of data on this agency does SEO, but they do SEO for B2B marketplaces, for example. So I've done programmatic SEO since way before it was called programmatic SEO. I've been doing it for 10 plus years now.
What is programmatic SEO?
Basically, it's using internal data that you have to build out pages that are useful to users, but also target queries that people are searching for in Google.
Can you give an example of what that looks like?
Yeah. So for example, Zillow, right? They're a real estate website. They're not going and manually creating all of their city and neighborhood and zip code, et cetera, pages. That's all being done programmatically. Those pages are being launched or were launched in mass based off of the data that they had internally. It's the easiest way to explain it. So it's very common in like e-commerce, marketplaces, SaaS companies they might call it programmatic SEO, but it's not really. So basically, we built out the full like directory and network that way with Credo. And so started generating leads from queries for like best agencies for lawyers in Austin, Texas, sorts of things. And we had agencies listed on that page and then they could contact us. Then we would learn more about what they needed and then connect them up with people. So agencies were paying us for the leads, the people looking for an agency, we weren't charging them anything.
A lot of our listeners end up selling in the $300,000 to $2 million range.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to if you would have stayed on as the operator of Credo, what could you have done to get past that growth curve? Or what's your post-game analysis on that?
Yeah. At the end of the day, I sold it because I burnt out really hard, like true burnout, simply because I'm a growth guy, right? I'm a marketer, I'm a salesperson, and we had lost a consistent way. The market had gotten so saturated. I'm sure you guys get inundated. Can you handle 17 more sales calls next Tuesday, like sorts of emails?
Yeah.
So many of those came up in the space and the economics of the whole business changed that we were going to have to basically overhaul the business model to make it work again because we had just like capped out and it wouldn't grow. I invested hundreds of thousands of dollars that I wasn't paying to myself that I tried to get the business to grow and I couldn't move the needle on leads and like that sort of stuff. If I had had the energy and the drive to do it, I would have gone back to in the middle of the business, we built out an escrow payment marketplace. So basically a client would sign with an agency using our technology. Say they signed a $5,000 a month SEO contract. Then the client would fund that. The agency would deliver the work. We required that they deliver reporting to the client because a lot of agencies are bad at that. And we knew that it was good for clients to get reporting. And then we would pay the agency from the money held in escrow. So we rolled that out mid-2019. And by February of 2020, I think we processed $125,000, $130,000 or something like that month. And then the pandemic hit and we basically just went to a straight like subscription plus a percentage of closed work model. I got scared. And just to stabilize the business, we kind of lopped the product in half and changed the model in like 2 weeks directly following. But if we had stayed the course for another few months, it would have been a multi-million dollar a year business.
Just for the escrow component of it?
Just for the escrow component of it. Yeah.
It's interesting. I think about these escrow situations a lot when you like buy and sell things online, whether it's like a service or a product, if you don't know the buyer. And there's so much trust that happens. It's incredible. Like you just trust that this person on the other side of the world is going to deliver for $10,000, whatever it is that you agreed to.
Yeah.
And like 99% of the time it works out. But I'm curious with that escrow product, because I see such a need, like what do you think happens to an escrow product like that after you have a relationship? Because in my mind, it really works like upfront when you don't know somebody, but what happens like a year in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's one thing about running more of like a marketplace is you have to build in to your model that there is going to be leakage like that. What a lot of companies do, like what TopTal does, for example, is you can buy out the person or the provider from paying them through. You can pay the company, like I know Lemon.io, like it's like what Latin America-based developers, you can pay them like some thousands of dollars and just buy out the contract and work with the developer directly and pay them directly. So that's what a lot of companies do. People are still going to get around it and you can control as much as you can, but at the end of the day, it's still going to happen sometimes. But the other thing is like, and this is just true with every business, you just have to provide enough value, right? So like we were providing enough value. We weren't adding charges on top. We were taking ours. The agency was basically the one paying us because we were taking our cut from what the agency sold to them. We weren't saying, hey, it's going to be $5,000 to the agency and you're going to pay us another $1,000. We were saying, hey, like agency closes it for $5K and we were taking our cut from that. So it wasn't costing the company anything else. It was giving them all these protections and they were getting like us stepping in when there were problems. So there's a lot of value to them and people... The client side really loved it. The agency side hated it because they couldn't control everything themselves, but they were also closing a ton of work. So they put up with it.
I think about demand spigots. Like you started Credo in 2016 when a lot of us were starting agencies on SEO alone, or there's certain ways to get demand. And it feels like the landscape's really changed a lot where demand feels a lot more challenging now. And now a lot of things feel like they moved to social media.
Yeah.
Like the hot new spigots, so to speak. I never said that word on the podcast before. A demand spigot. I mean, in 2016, when you first started listening to the pod, we were hearing all day long from people who built multi-million dollar agencies off of 50 good articles.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I'm wondering if you've seen that trend unfold over your time with Credo. And now I'm curious how it resulted in Editor Ninja.
Where Credo kind of shifted to around the time that I stepped out was... At first, it was hard just to find them and to find good ones. So we were doing a lot of vetting. We had a vetting approval process. We had reviews on the site, all of that. And it shifted from that to it being who is the best agency for my specific business to work with. Because yeah, SEO agency, super broad, right? But then like e-commerce SEO agency, SaaS SEO agency, like that sort of thing. And it really came down to like agencies started to specialize and we've been increasingly seeing that. And so that became the value of, we're not just going to match you with three generic full service, like digital agencies, unless that's what you want and what we also believe you need. But like we can connect you with the best SaaS SEO agencies, for example, came the pitch, which worked pretty well.
Tell us about the genesis of Editor Ninja.
So I've been blogging for 25 years. I launched my first blog in 1999 on Zanga, if anyone remembers that.
Yeah.
But I started blogging then. I was like 15, 16 years old. And so I'm a lifelong writer and content marketer, but I hate editing. Not that I hate that it's a thing. I just don't like doing it myself and I don't like editing stuff myself. So as I was growing Credo and I was blogging, I'd write and then I'd publish and kind of like train of thought, write and publish. And I kept getting all these comments like, hey, good stuff, but like you have an unfinished sentence in the second paragraph. And I'm like, son of a gun, are you kidding me? So I basically got my assistant at the time to start editing my stuff that came in. Then we hired a writer and I went from being the writer to being the like content strategist and editor. And so then got my assistant, who is a trained editor, who is now Editor Ninja's head of operations. So they've stayed with me to start editing their stuff as well. So I started realizing that this is a bottleneck for people, especially founders, but also people producing a lot of content. Then the pandemic hit and I saw a lot of editors and writers getting laid off and was like, well, I'm pretty good at connecting people. So I think I could do something with that. And then, so that was kind of like the genesis of it. Like I actually launched the site like June 2020 and I got to the end of 2021. I was starting to burn out really hard and I was like, I need something, you know, it's like that entrepreneurial itch to create. And so I was like, I wonder what Editor Ninja has done this year. And I looked back and was like, wow, we've edited like, it was like 50,000 words and we had made like $1,000 or $1,500 bucks or something like that. And I had maybe worked 7 hours on the thing all year. And I'm like, that's interesting. I just finished doing 75 hard and was like amped up and ready, like ready to work and ready to work on something. So I formed the LLC. I launched the subscription offering modeled off of Design Pickle. So I know Russ over at Design Pickle and kicked his brain and seen the model. I was like, I think this could work for editing. So I launched it. And basically over the course of 2022, it started like gaining steam and we were editing more and I was having fun running it and got the chance to offload Credo. And so I kind of took that and said, I think Editor Ninja can be a thing. So I doubled down on it.
Tell us about the business right now as it stands.
Right now, we're editing between 600 and 800,000 words a month, mostly blog posts, some eBooks, some sales pages, a lot of AI content. We have 14 editors, all contractors, almost all based in the US. We have one in Canada. So it's all like onshore professional editors. Most of them have dual masters. I got lucky that I hire out of a specific program in Virginia for the most part. My head of operations graduated from that program. So we've hired a lot of her friends who are all professional editors. We vet everybody out and we're mid six figures in annual revenue right now.
You recently tweeted that you turned down a really big client for Editor Ninja. I'm wondering if you could use that story as a little bit of a view inside your world running an agency and what are some of the positives and negatives of the business model for you?
So remember that Editor Ninja is an editing agency. So we edit content that people are producing. This one specifically is for a company actually in the hiring space now that I think about it, which is strange, but basically they needed, it wasn't an editing role. It was more of like a QA. Is data being put into the right place, like in our system? Is it being put into the right place in their system? Let me put it that way. This is definitely QA. They're using AI to do this stuff. And I was like, this is a QA role. This isn't actually like an editing role. And so I think one of the challenges and also one of the things that productized services solve is the built to sell problem, right? Like I know you guys have read that book. I think you've mentioned it many times on the pod that agencies can become terrible to run when you're saying yes to everything. It's like, oh, you're doing like your editing for us. Can you also write the content? Can you also do the SEO for the content? What about technical SEO for the content? Can you also, hey, can you run our ads? Can you produce these? You know how it snowballs? So that's one of both the blessings and curses of running like a productized agency is keeping it focused and your service solving big enough of a need for the right type of customer for the agency to be able to get big enough. We've realized that if someone's producing less than about 15 to 20,000 words of content a month, we don't make sense for them because their problem isn't big enough, right? That's like six blog posts. You can find the time in a month to edit six blog posts. If we're talking about 26 or 56 or 106 blog posts, it's a different thing. So it's a much bigger challenge. So we've gone up market and we've 5x the size of our average engagement in the last 18 months, purposefully because the need is just so much bigger.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I'm curious, one of the things we put on our docket here is to talk about trends. And I love your thinking. I've listened to some of your podcast episodes. You're a wonderful observer of the space and you sort of have a front row seat to a lot of this stuff. I'm curious if you could walk us through some agency trends that you've been observing in the past few years.
Yeah. So I just mentioned one of them. I think the big one is that full service agencies are on their way out, except for the enterprise. Enterprises, they're super happy to pay for additional overhead. They want that like one throat to choke. Their account manager, it's like you're managing all the things and they don't want to have to go six different people and like hold six different people to their account. They're like, you're effing up, right? And that person like takes the brunt and they like sort it out. That still works in the enterprise. And enterprises are just like, they're so well recognized. I hate to say it this way, but they can do subpar work and get away with it and still grow and still be their market leaders just because they're so entrenched versus small companies can't afford that. And so I think companies in the bootstrap space are getting much more specific about how they're growing and what they're focusing on. And so there's just a lot more like specialized productized services and offerings. And we see that our best customers at Editor Ninja have also hired Video Husky for video and they've hired Design Pickle or Superside for design. And like they get the productized model and they're like, I need you to do this. I'm not going to ask you to do other things. So I'm seeing that there's just not a whole lot of need for a full service except in the enterprise.
One of the implications of this trend for our listeners is, and we'll kind of preface this business idea thing, which is you talk about larger agencies not really doing the work well. I think the path anywhere between 0 and 1 million, the opportunity isn't generating demand. If you execute well and you're focused, it's relatively simple to get a service agency to that level. That's what I've observe. Simple, not easy.
Yes.
Do you agree with that statement?
I do. I do. Yeah. As long as you have found the problem that is big enough and the niche that it is big enough for, I completely agree. It's just that it's a matter of execution and not giving up and keeping churn under control. But that also comes with like having market fit. So yeah, I totally agree.
Let's move on to the next trend.
Second trend I see is, and I was just talking with a fellow DCer actually, who lives here in Denver as well, that we're seeing that there is a need for a strategic layer, like an outsourced strategic layer across any department, specifically thinking about marketing and content, like outsource content strategists, outsource heads of content. I used to do like outsource fractional head of SEO work back when I was like consulting on SEO. I was living in the Bay Area and I'd go into clients' offices like a couple days a week, got to know their team, would clean up their like their marketing and growth teams, their SEO teams, get their traffic back on track, and then help them hire a full-time person. I think there's a need, especially in companies in the like, I'd say the $1 to $5 million range, something like that, where they don't have, they're in the dead zone, right? Isn't that what Greg Crabtree calls it? I just listened to the pod today. Yeah. They don't have the revenue yet to afford like a full-time just like content strategist or something like that, but they can leverage someone externally to like get that program going in the right direction, get it profitable, get it showing results. So then they can justify hiring a full-time person. So it's kind of that middle step between like full outsourced agency or like in-house hire. It's almost like coming in and building the program from a strategic perspective.
So it matches directly with that execution dynamic we're talking about, which is
right.
They have a demand problem to solve.
Yep.
But they don't have the big department budget to solve it.
You got it. You got it. And maybe like the founder is a writer and like they've been creating content and they're kind of seeing some results. And they're like, man, I'm so busy. I don't have time to do this anymore. And like, I say I am, but I haven't published anything in 3 months. So then they can hire someone to come in, do the keyword research, identify the topics, all of that. And then actually hire the writers and hire the editors or be the editor or be the writer to kind of just kickstart that program in an outsourced way. So it's not a full-time hire. So you don't have all the insurance and all those things. And then basically that's to like get the program going. And then you can justify hiring someone. But I think these like specialized strategists are becoming a bigger thing.
That's interesting. One of the things I love about agencies like Productized Service, they beget other Credo begets Editor Ninja. That kind of strategic layer often begets business partnerships.
Mm.
Because often it's a partnership that gets a business through the death zone. I mean, coming in with an agency is you're capitalized. You've got the kind of force of a partner. You call yourself a partner in your sales pitch. And sometimes that's actually how these things play out in real life, is that you end up partnering with one of your best clients to take it to the next level.
Yep. Yep. See that? I see that happen quite a bit. I mean, a lot of smaller agencies will end up getting snapped up by a big customer, because they see the opportunity there and the synergies there. And maybe you need more capital and they have capital to put into it. So it can work out really well.
The third trend you wrote here is agencies are looking for profitability a lot more. This seems to be across the board. What are you seeing?
Yeah. The challenge with the full service, yeah, ask us to do anything and we'll like figure out how to do it model, is that you're always going, you're always recruiting, you're finding specialists, you're figuring out how to execute on it, but you never actually like operationalize anything. And the way to actually find profit in your business is to have, as you said, a simple, but it's not easy to put together, but a simple model for growth. Like for us, for Editor Ninja, we know that for every additional 100,000 words a month that we bring on of editing volume that we bring in, we need another editor. We just know that, right? So it's super simple to scale. And I'm not thinking like, oh, how do we staff strategists? And how do we staff this? And how do we staff that, right? It's just become much, much simpler. It's easier to sell and it's easier to scale profitably just because the numbers are consistent. Especially if you have a recurring revenue business, then it's like way, way easier to scale. Keeping your COGS, your cost of goods sold in check and in line and tracking all of those, it just becomes a very clear path to profitable growth. You're not burning yourself out and not making any money.
You bring up a great point there, which is if it's reoccurring revenue, I think all agencies have this problem. Certainly we do on our recruiting business, which is like, okay, there's like a bunch of open roles. Two more open roles came through. It's like, oh man, is this the time we're supposed to hire somebody? But if you have the...
We had a good month. Let's spend it. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. And then let's spend the next 6 months trying to like pay for that person. And then like month 8, maybe you start to become profitable again. And it's a vicious cycle, right? So I think it's a good point that you make about the reoccurring model, which is like, hey, I know it's 100,000 words and we're reoccurring. So as soon as we hit that, we can hire somebody and then it makes sense.
And that's true on the delivery side, on the people that you have, like for us, our editors that are actually delivering the work, it becomes super simple. It doesn't solve the problem of like, when do we hire a salesperson? When do we hire an account manager? Like that kind of thing. Those problems still exist. But if you keep your cost of goods sold under like 30%, then you have revenue, you have margin to be able to go and like hire those people. I think it does actually make everything easier, but you still have the point between like, you feel like you might be ready to hire someone, the point you actually hire someone, like it's still like a bit of a stretch. And so everything's going to feel broken and super busy until you bring that person in. But that's just building a business.
Very cool. Is there anything else you want to say on trends? I wanted to jump into business ideas or just the concept of running an agency in general.
I think the biggest thing that like agencies really have to focus on, in the past, you used to, as we were talking about with enterprises, you used to be able to get away with delivering like kind of subpar work simply because there just weren't enough SEO agencies or whatever out there. But now there are so many and there are a lot that are really good. If you want to launch, like I would never launch an SEO agency right now. Well, no, I wouldn't. I was gonna say I might because I know a lot of people that would like that would hire us pretty quickly. But I've worked my way out of SEO specifically over the years, but it's just such a crowded space and you'd have to be really focused on it. And the only way to really compete these days in a crowded agency space is to have such a good offering that people are telling their friends and everyone about it. And you're getting people moving over from your competitors. So like the real thing that people need to focus on if they are starting a productized service now is like your delivery, your work quality has to be just best of the best, like top notch. Otherwise, you're going to cap out at like 200, 250K a year, and it's going to feel like a failure probably.
Interesting. Cool. Well, let's talk about some business ideas. Ian is here to judge. How about you kick us off? You are the guest.
Yeah, I will kick it off. So,
and I haven't read yours, so I wanted to have it be a reveal.
I love it. I love it. So, well, I'm not going to talk about the first one because I may do it myself. But the second one is, I was thinking about, so within our company, we have our own software portal. So a lot of people, a lot of like productized services will use like an SPP or something like that. I actually built our own system.
What is SPP? Service Provider Pro?
Yeah, that's the one. Yep. Yep. I think it's spp.co.co. A lot of people will use that. I actually built our own workflow like software portal, but you know, I'm a front-end developer for really hacky, like back-end developer. And sometimes, and I don't have a technical business partner in this business. So sometimes I just need a real developer to look at the code that I've written to tell me what I need to fix, right? What I need to change or to help me like solve a tough coding problem that I'm up against. So I was thinking something like software quality assurance, software QA as a service, where basically like you write the code, you put it onto a staging server and then, you know, they have access to all of that. You put in a request and they come in and within 24 hours, they've like reviewed your code, maybe cleaned up a few things. They put it where it belongs and it works better. And then either you push it live or they can push it live. That's something that...
How much would you pay for that?
I wouldn't pay for it yet just because we're not developing enough. But at Credo, man, I probably would have paid $500 to $1,000 a month because I had a technical partner in that that just sometimes needed a review. And we would sometimes ship bugs. So like I would have paid $500 to $1,000 to like be able to put in requests. And we probably would have done 10 to 15 requests a month. So I would have definitely paid for that. Or like non-developer, non-technical founders who are paying developers to build a SaaS or a product, but then they're kind of doing the QA and making sure it works. They don't actually know if the code is any good. I think that's an opportunity.
That's really interesting. There's this value chain of like, you're paying a lot for software.
Yeah.
But you're paying at different moments in time. And as an agency, where you get involved and how you get involved is a lot of the game. So if you start this QA as a service business, you could charge the membership for the audits. But then if you want me to come in and consult, now I'm charging you like, say, sort of an audit project fee.
Yep.
And then if you're following my advice and have proven that you're a good client, I could open up the doors to the Shangri-La development service, which only 10% of my clients get access to, the ones who are on the membership and who are paying or who are following the consulting. So you're basically like getting paid to vet the best clients, which I think is a really good model for agencies.
Yep. I think so. I think it'd be cool.
Okay. QA as a service. Number one, I'm going to start with a little service I'd like to call TikTok Titan. TikTok Titan. We talked about Spigot at the top of the episode. It used to be SEO. Publish a couple listicles and bam, you've got business. Now we're seeing these stories come out of the woodwork with TikTok. And it still seems like it's a fresh platform, especially for B2B. More and more business owners are going there, checking out stuff, looking for solutions to problems. And I think a lot of us would be decent at making content for the platform, but don't want to become native users necessarily. And I feel like someone who's an expert at the platform, who you had a weekly or a monthly meeting with, where you'd have a camera setup sent in from TikTok Titan, they would be sort of, you'd have an onboarding meeting where they'd get your points of view and your content and stuff. And they would just record you for 30 minutes. They just prompt you, just like a podcast. They just ask you stuff. And then TikTok Titan now, they've got 20 B2B clients. So they know how to cut it up. They know how to make it get attention. They post every single day or whatever the ideal cadence is for the price point, the membership that you've or the subscription you've opted into. And they give you a simple report every month. Hey, John, we put up 30 videos on your behalf this month. Here are the results. We're tracking it this way. We'll see you at our next recording meeting in 2 Wednesdays. That's TikTok Titan.
I like it. Would you focus on just one, like one channel? I mean, I guess if you're calling it TikTok Titan, you're just focused on TikTok, but what do you think about other channels as well? Because if you put it on TikTok, it's going to work on Instagram, right?
Supernatural.
Yeah.
It's just a bad name. Yeah, let's expand it.
Yeah, there are a few out there that I think do pretty well. Like it's a good offering. And if you could do it like high quality, maybe just focus on shorts or something like that, and the goal is to grow their audience on social media, I think it could work.
The other thing about TikTok Titan is
social sleuths.
Social sleuths. Social sleuths. John, let's do it, man.
I'm in.
I think that there's a lot of brands that the creator, like you said, are making buckets of money on TikTok now, and they want to professionalize it. And they have an operation to contend with now. They got to do product development. They got to do creative work. And having someone to come in and build that media out, I think that's a really good potential business.
Yeah.
I think people are working on this that we all know. I'm not going to blow the spot, but it's not for TikTok, but it is for content. And I think you're right, Dan. This isn't so different than like Book in a Box of like back in the day, whereas like you have all this information or knowledge, you just don't have the time or the attention to pay attention to something like TikTok, but you want somebody to interview you basically, or to pull the content out of you and to make stories on Instagram or Reels, whatever it is.
Well, I was just thinking like typically when we're starting an agency, I'm going to think about, hey, let's target people that are the efficiency gap, people that are already great on TikTok. They've got followings. We need to like get it going better, faster, longer, all that stuff. But I do think with an agency like this, you could actually focus on the prototype you're talking about, which is forget about knowledge gap. They know they want to be on social. It's the vanity gap. It's, I have a big consultancy. I've got a successful business. I've got a bunch of knowledge. Anything on TikTok, any traction over there is worth it to me. That's a long-term durability play, and I'm willing to invest capital in it. And I see there's a lot of clients like that. Same thing with Book in a Box. Hey, like I'm willing to invest 30, 40, 50 grand this year in this asset because I'm investing in the long-term durability of my brand, which is already established, even though this particular channel might not be. So I think that's a strong exception. We'll call it the vanity exception. Whereas for these sorts of clients, the results aren't as critical as, say, a struggling business searching a new marketing channel. But simply, they just want to get the message out there and multiply it and see what happens a few years down the road.
Yep.
So I'd look for clients who aren't obsessed with results if there's a new channel for them.
Yep. I think that's a good one. My next idea actually came from someone who runs that kind of business, my friend James, who runs a company called Castaway, which basically like starts taking podcasts and then chopping it up into different like assets and that sort of thing. But I asked James yesterday for an idea, and I call this one SaaS, 3 A's. It's the new SaaS, systems automation as a service. So like using Zapier and like those various tools that are out there that we all use. So many businesses in our space are built using bubblegum and duct tape called Zapier, and they're freaking breaking all the time, right? Like I had an issue yesterday where like text messages stopped sending when something happened, and it was no fault of my own. Like the number, T-Mobile just changed something with like using T-Mobile numbers to send out text messages. And so the number I had selected in Zapier stopped being allowed. And so I had to go in and troubleshoot it. And it took me like 45 minutes to figure out what the heck was going on, you know? I would love someone else to get those emails and go in and troubleshoot my Zaps for me. And then like rerun all the ones that failed and then just let me know that they did it, you know? So like people weren't missing their content or text messages or whatever.
This is a trend too, because people are actually reducing the amount of hiring they're doing because of this sort of automation. So you bring in a productized service before you hire an operations person or the next operations person, and you figure out what your limit is there. You pay a lower fee to the productized service.
100%. Yep. It was like WP Buffs for just WordPress back in the day, but do it for Zapier.
Very cool. Okay. So here's the next business idea. It is actually similar to TikTok Titan. It is a managed service for influencers' social media, and it's a managed VA service. So one of the things I see is like expansion and contraction into managed and into self-managed. And what I'm noticing is a lot of people hiring VAs nowadays to do the Instagram, to do the Facebook, to do these sorts of regular updates. The problem is creative direction and making it quality. And I think what happens is a lot of people bring it in-house and then it kind of falls apart because it's just another thing for them to manage. So I think for a lot of people building these VA firms, there's an opportunity to have it be managed in-house and present that as a social media agency, but you know you're getting access to a direct assistant who is part of an operational team that trains on specific channels. So we've got best practices in-house that this assistant is focused on about Instagram, about whatever different style guides they can choose from to make sure your content and your virtual assistant is even more effective on social media. I think that's a challenge. But if you can get over that hump of like the person in the Philippines or LATAM really doing high quality work on your social media, I think that's worth a lot to people.
Yeah, I think it can be when it's a good channel, you know, a good acquisition channel for you. It's definitely hard to scale, but I could see that being useful.
One of the themes I'm hearing from both you guys is like the final 10%. And John's example of the QA service, it's just that final 10%, right? So it's like, I'm willing to write the code. I just need somebody to come in and like do that final 10%. And kind of the same with Editor Ninja, right? Too. I mean, depending on how you use the product, I'm sure there's different ways that you can use it, but it's like that 10%. With the social media thing too, it's like, hey, you know what? I've cooked up some videos here there, but I need the final 10%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've done the hard work of writing the content or whatever, but what I have found is that people who like doing that creative work, writing blog posts, creating videos, shooting videos, whatever, they're not the best at, and they don't prioritize the final, as you said, that final 10%, that final bit. And that final bit is what sets you apart from everybody else. Because everyone can do anyone, honestly, can do the 90%. But it's that extra layer of polish, it's that extra little finish. I mean, even like AI content, people can create like the same stuff. They can create a ton of content using AI, but it's all going to be equally bad or good. I mean, based off of the prompts. But like if you get a human to come in and like massage it and rearrange it and like that sort of thing, people aren't even going to be able to tell. And it's going to be so much better. It's going to rank better. It's going to convert better. It's going to do all of those things better.
And one of the most important parts of polish, if we're going to break it down, is consistency. And I think for a lot of the busy founders that are going to end up making the purchase decision on products like this, for them, one or two phone calls a quarter or DMs makes the whole thing worth it. But they're going to miss out on a lot of that if they're not consistent. And so yeah. I think that that's a big part of the value proposition for this.
That's true. Yep. Consistent quantity and quality. It's all hard.
It's a lot of Q sounds.
It's a lot to keep up with.
All right. You got one more for us, John?
You saw EOS in there and liked it. So the idea here is basically like business strategy or planning as a service. Because when you're a founder, you're a solo founder, you're on your own. I'm very fortunate that, you know, I have a head of operations who I really trust. And so like we kind of did our business planning this year together and we run like a very bastardized version of Traction. But this is where masterminds and all that come into play as well. But it can really help to have other people to bounce your ideas off of and for people to also help you kind of plan out what's coming up. So whether it's like your coming quarter, your coming sprint, your coming like shape up, right? Like whatever that is, actually helping you like say, okay, these are the company goals. These are the things we're thinking about doing. Do we think they're going to get us there? And if we do, then what can we actually execute on this quarter without overextending ourselves, right? And I don't know, maybe this is a business advisor, maybe it's a fractional project manager with like integrator tendencies, something like that. But I think having, it's basically a like, it's a fractional business strategist that really gets the business side and what it takes to get things done internally at a business based off of the people, budget, et cetera, that you have.
I love this.
I think that the trick is the economics and the angle, because we can all go out and get a business coach for $10,000 a month. That's been there, done that. And then the question is like, what are you going to chunk off as your deliverable that drives value for the client that you can be profitable on? I got an option for you, John.
Okay.
And one of the angles that we've been exploring through Profit First, through Greg Crabtree, all these folks, is from a CFO perspective. And, you know, fractional CFO is one thing, but what about if that business consulting in a box was your financial dashboard? It comes from this pain that I think almost everybody is half satisfied with their bookkeeping.
You want to say half satisfied with their bookkeeper or their accountant?
Both. I want to say both. Very few people glow about either. And one of the reasons I think is because both entities have kind of a power over you, because they know things sort of about your business that you kind of know. And so they're telling you the news, but they're not helping what you're trying to do as much as you'd like. They're sort of doing what they need to do. And I think when you bring in a finance person, you start to realize that simple financial tools can be extremely empowering, like EOS is on the operational side. What is the EOS for the finance side? And is there a team that could come in, make quick work of whatever your CPA, your bookkeeper has pulled together in a few days and present to you a dashboard that's not bare metrics, but is actually key operational metrics like a CFO would produce, something that you can look at on a quarterly basis and have a meeting about it to set the financial tone? This business could have a strong perspective, a very simple framework for presenting metrics, and then comparing you to the other customers in their database. And it's the same kind of deal where it's another way as a quality as a service we talked about earlier. You can then vet your best clients to ultimately come into those downstream services or to work with partners. But I think this is a way to engage people at the highest C-suite level. I'm going to give you a quarterly financial dashboard. I'm going to interface. I'm going to audit your book people. I'm going to audit your CPA. And we're going to talk strategy. We're going to talk your individual financial strategy as a founder. And we're going to talk about the best practices and what your financial dashboard needs to look like from an operational perspective.
I would love this. I think it's a great idea. I went through the other day, I watched an Alex Hormozi video. It's called like the 7 business metrics you don't know, but that will change your business. He's talking about like lifetime, gross profit, and that sort of thing. CAC to LTV ratios, all of this sort of stuff. And I went through and calculated it out. I also looked at the difference between like a year ago, and it's like, wow, we have 4x our average, like our lifetime gross profit per customer. Percentage of our COGS has gone down in like percentage of projects, like that sort of thing. And then also saying, you know, just getting the basics of like, if we continue at this churn, at this growth rate with this many leads and this many sales at this average revenue, we're, the company's going to cap out here, right? In X months. That knowledge right there is so powerful that you can then make business decisions from. But if someone could run that, and I think the key part, what you said was then giving you context for how that compares against the rest of the market and kind of what they're seeing. And like, are you overperforming? Are you underperforming? Are you underinvesting in marketing? Are you overinvesting in marketing? Are your sales close rates great or bad?
Totally. That's what your CPA and bookkeepers, they don't do that. They don't say like, these are your minimum targets. Like Hormozi's saying your gross profit, LTV gross profit to CAC needs to be at X. If it's not at X, right now, we're on the phone now. Let's talk about some ways that you can work towards that in the next quarter.
Yes.
Greg Crabtree says your labor efficiency ratio needs to be at 2.
Yep.
Your return on invested capital needs to be at this. And if you're not there, I mean, the EOS folks, they're talking about it at the project level, at the capacity level, at our client met this metric level. But the big picture is we're building an asset. And I feel like so little business coaching focuses on the financial element for our level, for our niche, for these sorts of companies. And so I think that would be a really interesting way to enter into the market and set yourself apart.
Yeah, I think that would be cool.
What John was talking about, that exercise that you did of Hormozy's, it's interesting because most of us do that exercise never or really late in business. I think that's just kind of the part of the difference though between like big businesses and a lot of bootstrap businesses. It's like you just run in a direction and you're just like, oh, I hope this is going to work out. 10 years later, you're like, ah, it didn't work out. And you're like, well, why? It's like, well, I actually never really ran the numbers.
Yeah.
John, you know what's so funny? I listened to that exact podcast and did the exact calculation.
Did you? Love it.
Yeah, I was at Topgolf and I pulled up my notebook because he had like little shorts of hand in there and there was some count. It was very smart the way he presented that.
Yeah.
I love that. It brings me to this idea. I was thinking about all of these like as a service ideas. People say, I don't want to start an agency. I don't want to start a service ideas. We're presenting these because they're great ways to get started. But there's a spectrum here. You can go fractional. You can go freelance. You can do service, agency, product, software. All these things are just different ways to attack the same problem. Here's another one. I love workbooks. I don't think there's enough workbooks. What if you could send out, I did the math that Greg Crabtree presented in his book. What if there was a 15-page workbook that he mailed out to me or I could download from the web and just put in some basic numbers and get my own dashboard on my own? And now click, I buy into the consultative service. I see a few of these sorts of assets in our space. And I was thinking about one of our other speakers, Kathleen Lavery. She creates these workbooks that you buy this beautiful asset and then you have a goal in mind, which is I want to have my best year ever, or I want to lose weight, or I want to be more mindful, have more gratitude. Whatever it is your goal is, we all have this goal of like, we want to make businesses we can sell at a good multiple, and we want to have great cash flow and a durable business. Where's the workbook for that? The problem when I read EOS is I'm just like you, I'm going to be 15% done in 2 years.
Right.
And I think it would be really cool for consultants, for services, for fractional agencies to create these assets that we can have the realization on behalf of their brand. And I bring up the workbook concept because I think it can apply to all different sorts of services businesses.
Well, and if it gives you a structured way to do it, right, that can apply to pretty much any business, calculating out these numbers, and here's how you calculate your lifetime value. Here's how you calculate your lifetime gross profit. Here, plug it into the spreadsheet, right? Then it'll spit out these numbers. Like, what is your lifetime gross profit to CAC ratio? Hormozy talks about, you know, you don't want anything less than 3. If you're at 5, you're doing well. And if you're at over 5, basically you're doing great. Editor Ninjas was 7.4. So I'm like, damn, I'm underinvesting in marketing. Like, we could grow faster. Like, I'm not pushing the gas as hard as I could. That right there was clarifying. I went and like doubled my ads budget. Because I'm like, okay, like if this continues to hold true, these numbers continue to hold true, we can grow faster. I could take that down to 5. I'm comfortable with that. But like just having that insight, and as you said, it's like you could have that template, have that workbook, and then whatever company sold that to you, then it's like, wow, I've got these numbers, but I don't know what to do next, right? Let me pay for a consultation, and then that takes you up the next step of the value ladder, and then up the next step of the value ladder. So I think that would be a smart business. I would buy that workbook.
I think that's a cool concept. I feel like I had one more. I'm going to have to save it for another episode. Anybody have any other business ideas?
I think I'm tapped out.
Cool. Hey, this is awesome. John, it's a pleasure to finally have you on the TMBA pod. And we look forward to seeing you in Mexico. And good luck with Editor Ninja, of course.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. You can go to tropicalmba.com, get access to hundreds of back episodes and all kinds of other goodies. Load up your iPod. That is the cheapest way to fly business class on your next international flight. We will see you next Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.